This is Jordan Seculo today on Jay Seculo Live. In a tweet storm, no, you can't make this up, Iran's Ayatollah admits the weakness of his country.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Sometimes it's just too good to be true what these world leaders will start putting out through tweet. So now we have the Ayatollah Khomeini tweeting over the last couple of days about the state of Iran. Now, he starts off with some very tough rhetoric. But within the rhetoric is an admission of weakness, and I wanted to point into that. So the first part of this tweet storm, and it goes on and on there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then an additional 7th tweet in a row, including an infographic about why we do not negotiate with the U.S. He starts with this. Recently, U.S. officials have been talking blatantly about us. Besides sanctions, they are talking about war and negotiations. In this regard, let me say a few words to the people. All caps. There will be no war, nor will we negotiate with the U.S. Now, one, he can't promise his people there will be no war. Here's why. He's got his Iranian Revolutionary Guard now threatening to shut down the Strait of Hormuz again because of the November 5th deadline of sanctions that go into place on Iranian oil shipments. So he's trying to make a claim to his people that there's no war. But why do I say that he is admitting their weakness? Look, it's three tweets down in this tweet storm from the Ayatollah. And we are now living in a day and age where we have tweet storms from an Ayatollah, but it's true. He said the JCPOA, the Joint Cooperation Plan of Action, was an obvious example of what negotiations with the U.S. would bear. We can enter a risky negotiation with the U.S. only when we have reached achieved the desired level of power in economy, politics, and culture. So the U.S. pressure. Now, remember that first tweet, he said, we will not negotiate. Two tweets down, he admits why he can't. We don't have the power in the economy or the politics or the culture to negotiate. So this is now him stepping in. He's also in another tweet, as we predicted on the show, starting to blame economic woes on the political leaders of Iran.
But, you know, Andy, I was thinking about this. You and I have studied this at Oxford before, and it's interesting. They love closing the Straits of Hormuz.
Oh, the Straits of Hormuz.
That's like their thing.
The Straits of Hormuz is always the ultimate threat.
We should get a map of that for the next segment so we can show everybody what we're talking about. They love closing the Straits of Hormuz.
Yeah, that's always the ultimate threat, is we're going to close the Straits of Hormuz. I could make a play on those words and those terms, but I won't, because I'm wondering what he's talking about when he knows that he's not going to do that or can't do that.
And what would happen if he did that, Wes?
Well, it's one of the few capabilities they have. They don't have a lot of military capabilities in spite of their rhetoric. But yeah, what would happen, it's been the longstanding policy of the United States that we will use military force, if necessary, to keep the oil shipping lanes open, period, end of sentence.
And that's really what it is, it's the oil shipping lanes. So the Straits, breaking news alert, the Straits of Hormuz will not be closed.
No, and if they are, then his tweet will be wrong. When you put in all caps, no war, there will be war, and Iran will lose.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, I think, the reality of what we're dealing with here. I mean, it's very serious.
And he's starting to shift that blame. So culturally, what's he have? He's got infographics up about why they won't negotiate. But again, it's this admission of weakness, which I think is so clear. We have put Iran at a point where they feel like they are too weak at the world stage, economically, politically, culturally. He uses that terminology. This all comes in light of the new sanctions that are right around the corner, November 5th. That will include a boat, by the way, not just oil, but a boat and some other vessels that were previously sanctioned by the U.S., unsanctioned by the Obama administration, surprise, surprise. One of these is a boat right off the coast of Yemen. It is called, it's quote, the mothership stationed in the Red Sea, providing information to and materials to the Houthi rebels to attack the Yemeni government. And you can actually see the pictures. This vessel will be sanctioned once again so that it will not be able to have these, to be able to sit at these ports of call. It's called the Saviz, backing the Iranian terror efforts in Yemen. There's even images of the go-fast boats that Iran uses just sitting on top of this vessel. Remember, Obama administration lifted the sanctions on it. Trump administration is putting the sanctions back on vessels like these, which are literally terror vessels there to support the terrorists in Yemen. We're taking your phone calls. What do you think about Iran's admission of weakness? 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Can we avoid conflict? 1-800-684-3110.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Well, the Ayatollah went on a tweet storm. I mean, you don't see that every day in the world, but he did. And he said, recently, U.S. officials have been talking blatantly about us. Besides sanctions, they are talking about war negotiations. In this regard, let me say a few words to the people. All caps, as Jordan said. There will be no war, nor will we negotiate with the U.S. It goes on and on. And they say this, unlike what some assume, U.S. offers of a negotiation is not a new issue and has been repeated over and over during the past 40 years, receiving a negative response from Iran. I don't know who the Iranians think they're playing with here. On this, but you know, if I were the Iranians, giving them legal advice, which I'm not, of course, or giving them political advice, is, you know, the idea that they think they're going to be able to take some kind of defensive action or offensive action, I think it's really what it is, from a military perspective, that just does not fly.
It doesn't fly, although they've done it in the past.
We let them capture our name. I don't see this administration allowing our sailors to be captured on an Iranian speedboat.
Right. I was just about to say exactly that. They do not know exactly what President Trump would do. And I think that makes the likelihood of their fast boats harassing U.S. sailors less likely, because the response would be swift. It would be overwhelming. And I think the Iranians know that.
You know, there's another, and the vice president issued a tweet as well. It says, America's trying by applying various pressures on our society to force us to retreat and surrender. Well, the fact is we've relisted one of their boats that's hanging around off of Yemen as a terror, on the terror list again. And the fact is, of course, we're trying to apply pressure. They're the largest state sponsor of terror in the world. And their economy is also, Harry Hutchison, professor of law and economics, very fragile.
Absolutely. But it's also important to note that Iran has long underestimated the United States and the West because of the policies of Jimmy Carter, because of the policies of the Obama administration, and because of the weakness of the European community. Notwithstanding that, the imposition of U.S. sanctions on Iran will help bring a crumbling economy to the ground. People are already demonstrating in the streets. They're saying death to inflation, death to high prices, and they're urging the Iranian government to stop meddling in the Middle East. And consistent with Iranian meddling, we have a ship called the Shahbaz, which is located off the coast of Yemen. And so new sanctions will be imposed on that ship. New sanctions will be imposed on Iranian petroleum transactions in November.
Yep.
And so I think the Iranian economy is headed for a fall.
Andy, when you look at this historically, and I'm not talking about historically the last 100 years, but since the Shah fell, so we're talking, you know, over a 40-year period now. When you look at it historically, the Iranians move in the, it's very cyclical. They threaten, then sometimes they'll take action if they see vulnerability, and then they de-escalate. And
then you
see people on the street, and then depending on what support they're getting internationally, you either have that take action or not. Where do you see it right now in that phase?
Well, right now, obviously, they're on the offensive. These tweets, Twitters coming out from Khamenei indicate that they're taking the offensive approach because of whatever it is that's causing them to take this.
Could it be the impact
escalated
of the
position?
Already? I'm sure it is.
On whom?
The sanctions. Already
clearly
have
on the
impact.
Sanctions.
$400 million. The Germans said they're not putting.
Well,
over there.
I think they're here. They're also looking at the sanctions that are being placed on Turkey, and they're saying this is going to happen or is happening to us as well. In other words, there's a new administration in the White House. We're not playing with Obama anymore. We're not playing with delisting the Saviz as a boat. We're not playing with the accords that they entered into with the Iran nuclear deal. There is a new administration in the White House, and it's different.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-684-3110. Do you believe that the Iranians would take a step, be considered an act of war with the whole world? 1-800-684-3110. Or do you believe this statement of weakness is true? Robert in Maryland, online too, probably unintentional from the Ayatollah, but he made it very clear to me. Yeah. Robert, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
All right, Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jordan. Hi, Jay. I wanted to ask the both of you, what are the top three weaknesses that the Ayatollah mentioned in the tweet storm that his country is experiencing right now that the U.S. could exploit?
Well, I think the economic pressure that's coming from the sanctions has, number one, been very significant. I mean, really significant. So that's number one. Number two, they know that they are no match for the United States, and they say it. I mean, Jordan pointed that out earlier. They are not a match for the United States. Number three is that the rest of the world, as we expected, is starting to take action against Iran as far as economic development and economic partnerships because of the sanctions the Trump administration's put forward. So what's happening is the Iranian economy is, like the Turkish economy, teetering on disaster.
And this is from his perspective, his top three, the Ayatollah. So I think that you're getting the Iranian perspective. Again, I think it's true about the U.S. He mentions that you can't negotiate with the U.S. because of the weakness. Here's what he highlights. First one was the economy. He says that in a tweet. We have to achieve the desired level of power in the economy before we negotiate with the U.S. So that's money. Politics. I think what he's talking about there is domestic leaders having serious problems running the country. The Ayatollah technically doesn't run the country day to day. He oversees everything. So that's the domestic leaders. Remember, we talked about how they could be at risk here because what could happen is that they blame all this problems on the current government of Iran, the president and his team, and try to throw them out of power and say, see, it's their fault. And then the third is the culture. I think that goes to the unrest within the people, that they're not a united culture right now, and that the Ayatollah is admitting that the Iranian people are not united. And it's because they're taken to the streets. It's because you have religious leaders who don't support political leaders, radical religious leaders who are now bucking religious leaders. You have these kind of moments after moment, and he's admitting it via tweet. He is telling the world, he is telling the United States. I think, again, this is how weak they are. They are at a point where even the Ayatollah is sending out this message of, how could we negotiate when we have nothing to negotiate with?
So let me ask the military question, because I think it's the obvious elephant in the room here. What can they really do, Wes, from a military perspective? Right. You've been in that region. You've served in that region.
Yeah, they can harass. It's not likely they're going to do anything outlandish, like, you know, launch a massive...
Well, is outlandish, though? Let me ask that. I didn't mean to interrupt, but is outlandish going over to a U.S. Navy ship and capturing sailors?
It would be now. It wasn't before.
What would happen now if they did that now?
I think our sailors probably, you know, the word has gone down through the ranks that you do not surrender. You return fire. If you feel threatened, you fire on them, and you can do preemptive fire. The other thing, Jay, that I think will happen, though, Iran, as I said earlier, is not stupid. They're not going to provoke directly the U.S. military, I don't think. What they will do, and I think this ship in the Strait of Mandab off the coast of Yemen is an indicator of that, they will use the Houthi rebels to disrupt shipping instead of them doing it. So you look for the Houthi rebels who are armed and supplied by the Iranians with sophisticated weaponry, look for them to start attacking shipping, and that way Iran has plausible not deniability.
So we also have the Iran-Turkey relation, Andy, which we've talked about in our – we have a book that's dealt with that one too. We've produced a lot of scholarship on these issues. And so you've got Iran and Turkey, which traditionally had been hands off each other and not having a great economic relationship. They started doing business together. Now we've sanctioned both governments.
Yeah, I don't think that Khamenei doesn't realize what's happening to Erdogan, because I think he is. And I think that a lot of what that you see in these Twitters from him is a reaction against what the United States is doing, the economic warfare. And, Jay, we have to admit, we are engaged in an economic war with Turkey right now. The Turks have now retaliated. They've put a tariff on cosmetics, and they've put a tariff on other goods coming into Turkey from the United States. But I think what the, President Trump is doing to Turkey is having a tremendous effect on Iran and may have been the catalyst for all the things that we see coming out of Iran and Khamenei, actually.
So, Harry, when I look at the economy, and then we're going to take another call here in a second, Jordan. Yeah. No, we'll wait till after the break. But, Harry, when I look at the economic situation in Iran and look at a Turkey, in Turkey, it looks very similar as far as what's happening to the valuation of their currency, how their exports are going, how other nations in the world are responding.
And in terms of their dependence on foreign investment. So if you look at Turkey, for instance, foreign investors are fleeing. The same thing is beginning to happen in Iran. So following the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, foreign investors came to Iran. Now they are beginning to flee. In addition, Iranian clerics are beginning to support the people. And thirdly, I would add, you have the issue of income redistribution. Hmm. So if you look at all of the money that Iran took in after the Iran nuclear deal, they redistributed that money to the leaders, to the elites.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge disparity going on in Iran.
Yeah, and I think the same thing's happening in Turkey simultaneously. And they're both in the same region of the world. So there's a lot of moving parts here. All right.
Folks, we are going to be taking your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. I think when the Ayatollah of Iran goes on a tweet storm involving the United States and actions in potential, you know, war, negotiations, it deserves our attention and also our analysis about what it means in the state of Iran. I want your thoughts on it. What do you think about this admission of weakness by the Iranian Ayatollah? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Words are very important in that part of the world, and I think they know what they are saying. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org.
welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. 1-800-684-3110. I want to play something that the Ayatollah, we've gone through his Twitter storm. Let's say this is translated into English, but this is what he said yesterday.
If by some force of circumstance there was a possibility for the Iranian government to speak directly with the American regime, we would never negotiate with the current U.S. government. We have been in wars, but the other side has always started the war. We will respond with great force if war is waged against us, but we will never start a war.
And you would lose. Let me just say it that way. And you would lose that war, Ayatollah Khomeini. That's number one. Number two. You will never sit down and negotiate with this administration, because you're right. You're not going to do that because of the previous administration. It was so easy to sit down and negotiate and get pretty much whatever you wanted. An unverified JCPOA with meaningless impact. Number three, you've also seen that despite your protests to the contrary and the European Union trying to work around it, Harry, it looks like the European Union companies that are in the European Union are saying, you know what? We do this amount of business, small amount of business for our radio audience.
$10 billion.
$500 million. Yeah. What is it? A third of the amount of business? No, it's not even that.
So,
which 20% of the business they do with us? They do 20% with Iran that they do on another 80% with us. I mean, it's a huge number.
It's actually
even more?
A worse ratio than that. So okay. In 2016, the European Union exported approximately $10 billion worth of goods to Iran while importing about $6.5 billion from Iran. This level of trade is dwarfed by the $1.1 trillion EU trade in the same year. So the Europeans are not stupid. They are prepared to throw Iran under the bus, economically speaking, in order to continue their trading relationships with the United States.
Got it. So the economic impact, they're feeling the real economic impact of all of this. Andy, what do you see happening here with this, and what's your sense of what happens? We'll go ahead and take a call.
Well, I think the sense is that the Iranian economy and the political situation continue to decline. As we know, their monetary system is declining, similar to Turkey. I'm drawing tremendous parallels, Jay, between Iran and Turkey right now, because I'm seeing the leaders like snakes in the ashes, writhing because of what the Americans are doing in terms of sanctions. And I'm seeing parallels between the two countries that indicate to me that ultimately what President Trump's view is and his aim is ultimately regime change. And you know what? He's doing it, and he's doing it through the power of the economy.
Yeah, it's a form of economic warfare. Look, diplomacy, I keep using that Disraeli quote where he says, diplomacy is war without violence. And I think economic sanctions is a form of war without violence, too. Anyways, take that for what it is. All right, let's go ahead and take some phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. Interesting conversation on the situation in Iran, which is, again, the largest global exporter of terrorism in the world. That's one thing they export more of than anybody else, terrorism. All right.
Rolene in Louisiana on line one. Rolene, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Rolene, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm not quite sure how to word this, but let me try to get it out there because I wanted some input. I know that Iran and the United States are in this battle, okay, back and forth and back and forth. But yep. What I want to know is what the other countries like Israel and Jordan and Saudi Arabia, what are they planning to do, and how are they responding to the tension that's being created?
Well, look, the Israelis, the Saudis are very concerned about Iran, Wes, and there's an alliance that's developed actually between the United States, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, and a lot of the Gulf states against Iran. It's a common enemy and considered the biggest country for destabilization of the region. Wes, what's your view?
Other than Qatar, all of the Gulf states have allied against Iran and their influence. And interestingly enough, the United Arab Emirates, they are actually participating with Saudi Arabia now in attacking the Houthi rebels in Yemen. And so we have a strong relationship with all of the Arab Gulf states, as well as she said, with Israel and Jordan. And if they were to be attacked in an overwhelming way, the United States, as we did in the first Gulf War, we would intervene. I don't think that will happen. Iran is very correct, I think, in their intention when they say they will not negotiate. But that doesn't mean that they won't react. And I think what we will see in the weeks and months leading up to November, when the sanctions come into full force, is that they will beef up their military support to Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthi rebels, and we will see increased activities from those three terror groups supplied and trained by Iran to take action in retaliation against the United States.
Here's the problem that they had, though, and I think this is the reality. The reality is the people on the street don't want this, Andy. I mean, they continually say, the chanting of debt to America has stopped, and it's no more funding of Hezbollah, no more funding of Hamas. We want food, we want education, we want water.
Right.
The people of Iran are revolting.
Death,
I mean, it's not
dictators.
Reached the numbers that it did in the 2009 revolution. No, clearly not. But there are millions of people out across the country on this.
Iran is the people of Iran, Persia, ancient Persia, are very civilized people. They had years and years of exposure to the West under the Shah. They have a completely different standard of living. We're not talking about Cappadocia in the middle of a Turkey, where you got farmers living on dirt farms, eking out a living from the hard earth like they do in Turkey, where you've just got really Istanbul. You've got a different culture and a different situation, and they're not going to tolerate this for very long.
All right.
And so I think that they're at that peak of if they're not economically, it seems like that the people, at least these generations, they have not bought into the religious side of this revolution.
I think that's true.
And if you don't buy into the religious side, it's tough to suffer for things that you know you could have right away, that life would, that you've got a culture that would be right back in the middle of things. And listen, I mean, the caller asked about the rest of the world. The rest of the world would love to see this Iranian regime gone. And I think that includes most of the Iranian people. I mean, they want to be secure as a people, but not and there's going to be issues between them and Saudis for all always, right. But that could really be a different, I mean, you could, that could be a much different relationship. So let's take another call, and then a second half hour coming up as well. We'll take even more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to David in Massachusetts on line two. David, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, David.
Hi, guys. Hey. Thank you so much. You're doing an awesome job. Here's my concern. We start to choke. I ran off 3-6 months from now, they're backed into a corner they can't get out of. Do we know the nuclear threat they can propose? The concern is that, you know, we choke them to a point where they're suffocated. Do we know what their nuclear capabilities
are?
Well,
we have the nuclear inspections are meaningless, right, Harry? I mean, have been meaningless.
Absolutely.
And they continue. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the nuclear inspections are unverifiable, and that was one of the prime weaknesses with respect to the Iran nuclear deal. Essentially, the Europeans and the Obama administration purchased a promise from the Iranians not to engage in nuclear activity. And the Iranians were quite happy to promise while continuing to explore and develop their nuclear capability, and in addition to which, they continue to develop their capability with respect to ballistic missiles.
Right. Go ahead.
I would say, with all the intelligence around the world, though, there will never be a point in time in these administrations I can speak for that Iran will have an active nuclear weapon and there won't be conflict. I think if they got to that point, conflict occurs to take that weapon
out. Wes, you think so?
I agree.
Because or else you're going to have the Saudis with nuclear weapons, and they don't want them. Right. But I mean, then you'd have to nuclearize the entire Middle
East. Well, there's a great bite in our movie from John Bolton on that. I'm going to pull it. It says if Iran gets a weapon, Saudi Arabia gets a weapon, it's a very strong bite. We'll get that from former Ambassador Bolton, now the National Security Advisor. All right, we're here for another 30 minutes. If you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, go over to Facebook and Periscope. We're broadcasting there also at ACLJ.org. Don't forget our matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Back with your calls at 800-684-3110 in just a moment.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. And we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about the situation with Iran. Let's recast it. Jordan will recast for you what has happened. The Ayatollah Khomeini, the religious cleric leader of Iran, has issued a Twitter storm. So that's what right. Do we have?
All so right. It's got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row, one of those kind of tweet storms, and then an additional one on issues within, on sanctions, I think is very important. What we pointed out, and I think we could go over it again in the second half hour, is the first tweet. Recently, U.S. officials have been talking blatantly about us. Really? We have freedom of speech here in our country. They're talking blatantly about us. They're talking about war and negotiations. Kind of the two things you do. You negotiate or you end up in war. In this regard, let me say a few words to the people. All caps. There will be no war, nor will we negotiate with the U.S. So you take it all off the table. Smart move. And then he puts an infographic up about why he doesn't want to negotiate with the U.S. But the real key for me is in the third tweet, when he admits Iranian weakness. I mean, it seems like he should be getting in some trouble maybe in Iran. If he got the Ayatollah himself admitting that Iran is weak. Because he says the JCPOA, he loved that. That was the deal with the Obama administration, was an obvious example of what negotiations with the United States would bear. We can enter a risky negotiation with the U.S. only when we have reached the achieved and desired level of power in three things: the economy, politics, and culture, so that the U.S. pressure and uproars won't affect us. The Ayatollah of Iran has just admitted that they are too economically weak, too politically unstable domestically, and culturally ununited to even sit down and negotiate with the U.S.
All right, so let's break those down. Economically, are they are weak. How weak are they, Harry?
Well, they are weak, and they're getting weaker by the moment as foreign investment is beginning to dry up. The Iranian currency is beginning to crumble. Inflation rates are rising. And so the price of rice and bread are going up for the common working class individuals in Iran. In addition to which, of course, Iran has a huge income distribution issue because they have transferred huge amounts of assets to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard yep. and the elites. So economically, they have problems.
All right. So then they say anti-politics. So they said, until we reach the desired level of power in the economy, Harry just addressed politics. What do you think they're referring
I'm
to?
I'm not sure what he's saying there when he's saying politically. Obviously, there's serious dissent among the upper levels and echelons of Iranian society. And if he means political unity, that's not happening in Iran today. They're saying death to the dictators. These guys live in a luxurious environment, and we're down here at the bottom of the spectrum trying to eke out a living. And I think politically he realizes that he's so diverse and so united right now that they can't engage the United States.
He's also doing what we predicted on last week's broadcast. He's got another tweet out. That I think is very important, and he's got this tweet, and this is to Iranian leaders. Today's livelihood problems do not emerge from the outside. Now, this is after he's blaming sanctions. They are internal. If actions are taken more efficiently, more prudently, more swiftly, and more firmly, hashtag sanctions cannot have much effect, and they can be resisted. Who is he putting the blame on? He is putting the blame on the domestic political leaders in Iran. That is that warning we talked
said
about
that last week when you got the Ayatollahs fighting with the local politicians and an interreligious fight between the mullahs.
The mullahs started taking to the streets with protesters blaming the government for mismanagement of funds.
Yeah, politically, when he talks about, you know, they're not as powerful, I think that's exactly what he's talking about. I think he's going to lay the blame on President Rouhani and his cabinet and look for a change in that government, and I think it was a veiled message towards them.
Can I say something here? You're getting incredible analysis coming from this broadcast on this topic, and our team is very well versed in it because not only have we been to the region, but we also have studied this region of the world for a long time. We've written on it extensively. All right, we come back from the break. We're going to take more of your calls. 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget the ACLJ's matching challenge campaign at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Again, follow us on Facebook. I've got I'm Jay Sekulow on Facebook, Jordan Sekulow on Facebook, also on Twitter at Jay Sekulow, at Jordan Sekulow, at American Center for Law and Justice. That's at ACLJ, actually. And we encourage you to stay engaged on our social media platforms. We'll be back with more, including your calls, in a moment.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
So the Ayatollah Khomeini, has issued a Twitter storm. I mean, it's fair to say that's what he's done.
Yeah.
What do you think prompted this lengthy reaction from the Ayatollah?
With unrest in the streets, the new round of sanctions that we, as we talked to, Free Beacon writes about how that just this one ship, the Saviz, which is a ship that the Obama administration unsanctioned, which will now be sanctioned again, which means it won't be allowed to be in these ports of call. This is basically a ship that is sitting off the coast of Yemen in the Red Sea, providing munitions and targeting information to the Iranian-backed Houthi rebels to attack the Yemeni government, as well as the Saudi government, which those rebels have attacked. And there's actually imagery we've got up on our Facebook and Periscope feeds of this boat with go-fast boats on top of it. Those Iranian go-fast boats that they utilize in the Red Sea area and the Persian Gulf to operate militarily. And so literally it's a terror boat, and that's coming under sanction, but that goes to a bigger sanction. All shipping, all yep. petroleum. And if you're already at unrest levels with just the idea of those sanctions coming back, Khomeini and these others are preparing for people to really take to the streets because the economy could really falter.
All right, let's go ahead and go right back to the phones. 1-800-684-3110.
Rex in Texas, Opposing View. Rex, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Opposing views are unlike Iran. You could have an opposing view here. Rex, go ahead. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you. Why is Iran under sanction?
Under sanction for violating all of the agreements that they never really intended to engage in the first place, and that includes nuclear development and funding terror.
There's really, it starts with funding terror.
Yeah, so the funding terror is they're the largest state sponsor of terror in the world, and they've continued that, which was a violation of their so-called agreement. All right, next question. All right.
The next question is, if they can't, why can't they have nuclear weapons? They're a sovereign state. Pakistan does.
Yeah, do you think you think it's a good idea? Should we just go ahead and build it for them then?
It's not a question. No, my question is that how you would like them to treat us?
I don't care how the Iranians treat us in one sense because I don't trust the regime at all. So it's not a question of how they treat us. It's what are their actual actions. So I don't think you're advocating, Rex, that the Iranians should be allowed to get a nuclear weapon, are you?
I didn't say that.
You said, why can't Iran have a nuclear weapon? Because of global instability. That would be the reason. Yeah. They're not a rational actor. Go ahead.
Everyone would have a nuclear weapon. And listen, that goes against the whole goal of denuclearizing the world. I mean, the goal is that we don't have to have these weapons, that we won't have to have these weapons, that Russians won't have to, the Israelis, the Pakistanis, Indians. I mean, unless you could go back in history, you could say maybe not great decision when the Pakistan goes nuclear, then India must go nuclear. These are, some of these were mistakes and missteps. That being said, you don't help them along the way. And and you make it nearly impossible for any of these countries to actually develop functioning nuclear weapons. Okay.
Yeah, it's regrettable that as many nations as have nuclear weapons as they do. But Iran, unlike Pakistan and unlike India and other countries that have weapons, they are aggressors, and they've proven this over and over again, and they're bent on conquering that part of the world. Yep. You don't want a country like that to have nuclear weapons.
Andy, we've been on the border of Israel towards Syria. We've been in the south in Eilat. We've been on the border of Gaza. We know what Iran is capable of doing.
That's
and in their funding.
That's right. This caller doesn't really realize the fundamental thing about a prosecution of a criminal case is you don't give a serial killer an endless supply of guns and knives. And that's exactly what you've got here. You've got a nation that sponsors terrorism, and you're going to say to them, here's some more nuclear weapons so you can continue to export your terror. And that's the fundamental base. You don't give a killer a gun until he just wipes out the entire city.
Well, Harry, when you look at the JCPOA, they have not followed through with any of their the so-called parameters.
I think you're absolutely correct. And so it's important to take a step back. Iran has been a malevolent force in the world for decades. It has been the number one state sponsor of terror. The JCPOA does what? It helps Iran fund its malevolence.
Right.
So it makes no sense for the United States to allow the JCPOA to continue without reimposing sanctions on the Iranian regime.
You know, Rex's question was, why wouldn't it be okay for Iran to have a nuclear weapon? And Jordan said, correctly so, that this would just increase the nuclear area geopolitically. I had a chance to sit down with Ambassador Bolton and discuss this recently. Well, this was actually a couple years back in a movie we put together, but I thought it would be a bite worth replaying to show you what the now National Security Advisor to President Trump had to say about this.
I think in a multipolar nuclear Middle East, you'd have many countries looking at the one next door saying, I wonder if I should strike first before he strikes me. And I would think at that point, the use of nuclear weapons becomes almost inevitable.
There you have it. That says it. And then he goes on to say, if Iran has a nuclear weapon, well, the Jordan's going to want a nuclear weapon. The Saudis are going to want a nuclear weapon. And it increases nuclear capacity. All right, let's go right back to the phones here. 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, George in Arizona, online 5. George, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, George, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I'm
good.
A 30-year vet. I'm retired anti-terrorist force protection officer. But let me just say that I think what Trump's doing good. I think what we're doing in the Middle East is great. But I hope someone has their eyeballs in the big picture, because with all these nations that we have tariffs against and sanctions, are they talking together? And could we have a repeat of December 7th, 1941, where our only deterrence now is retaliatory? That's my only concern is how do we deal with multiple targets?
So I think, look, George, I mean, the cooperation going on country to country within our coalition is stronger than it's ever been. You have the most unusual alliance in the Middle East, and certainly, I think, West in our lifetime, and that is Israel, Jordan, Egypt, the Gulf states, and Saudi Arabia in alliance with Israel because of the threat of Iran. Iran's been the unifying threat factor.
Yes, it has. It used to be Iraq and Iran. Now it's just Iran. And the other thing, to answer the caller's concern, because it is a legitimate concern, because there is the potential of our enemies conspiring against us, say, for example, North Korea and Iran, which have a great relationship, it's why our intelligence services, Homeland Security, and the United States military, it's constantly vigilant, because they are countering this kind of threat. And we don't even know half of the threats that they actually defuse before they become, you know, super big threats. You know?
And that's why we've kept those countries, Iran, the whole world has kept those countries, Iran and North Korea, basically non-players to an extent economically. They don't. Their machinery is just not in place to go full scale war. They have a lot of people sometimes, but again, we've got that. We have at this point in time, you could say we have the weaponry to take these threats out before they would become a massive threat. There'd be casualties, yes, but I mean, again, remember how the wars ended in World War II, and there was a reason why. Now that hasn't had to be used again, but these countries, I think, know that in the back of their mind that why that we haven't seen that before.
But Andy, you mentioned the thing, you don't give a serial killer a knife and weapons. And right. that's exactly what you were dealing with. When you look at Iran and what they've done on this terrorism level, which we've witnessed firsthand, there's no question that you cannot elevate them to that kind of status.
No, you cannot. And what we were seeing happening with the Obama administration's adherence to the so-called, what is it, JCPOA,
yeah.
that was happening because there was no effective check on that. The current president, in an about-face, said, that's ridiculous. We don't have any really verifiability. Why should we be part of that? Why should we subscribe to something like that and pulled out of it? Correctly so.
What Debbie on Facebook asked us an interesting question, Harry. How, can you explain what was, quote, agreed upon, end quote, in the JCPOA? Because that's a really good question.
Well, essentially, Iran agreed to inspections so long as they had advance notice allowing them to remove the evidence before the inspectors showed up. So essentially, the JCPOA was unverifiable. Everyone knew that. Nonetheless, the Obama administration, along with its partners, decided to allow Iran to take control of billions of dollars, which they then used yep. to fund additional terrorism throughout the world.
So one thing I look at, Jordan, though, and I know you've been following this, and that is the protests on the street.
Yeah,
I remember you were very close, following it very closely when the situation when they had really big in 2009 during Obama. What do you see now? What do you when you're reading when you're
it's
analyzing?
Obviously on the brink. I mean, it's not at those levels. It's not every day. There's some things that concern me when you have the religious leaders, when you have Khamenei himself blaming the government. So you could have maybe a government shift politically where people may then not take to the streets again and say, oh, maybe he's right. It really isn't sanctions. It's not really our foreign policies. It's our domestic leaders don't know how to run our economy. That'd be a faulty short term. I think I hope that they don't fall for that, the Iranian people. But obviously, that is an attempt being made.
You think that's a tactic?
It's absolutely a tactic because Khamenei said in his tweet, in the same ground where we're saying, say today's livelihood problems do not emerge from the outside; they are internal. If actions are taken more efficiently, prudently, more swiftly, and firmly, sanctions cannot have much effect, and they
so
can
you
be
think
resisted.
He's blaming Rouhani.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's blaming the Iranian government from within.
And that's a tactical shift. Again, analysis you're not getting anywhere else. All right, we're coming to the last segment of the broadcast. We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. So Chris, Tamara, and Brunson, hang on there. We're going to get to you when we come back, and we've got a couple lines open for you at 1-800-684-3110. And again, don't forget the ACLJ's matching challenge at aclj.org. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org.
So Scott on Facebook says, if they don't ever get nukes, they can't strike first. Prevention is much better than elimination. There's no question about that. The question will be, will the people of Iran go to the streets? But I think what Jordan just said before the break, I think it's worth repeating, is the Ayatollahs are clearly trying to change the focus of the blame here.
Yeah, so they're not blaming even the sanctions. They're saying, hey, people, the sanctions won't be the issue if our leadership was better at the domestic level. I'm the Ayatollah. I'm the religious authority, and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is there to protect me and our revolution. But we need better leadership domestically. That's his message now. This is a new shift, and he tweets it out. Today's livelihood problems. So it means being able to buy food, power, education, all of that. Today's livelihood problems do not emerge from the outside. They are internal. If actions are taken more efficiently, more prudently, more swiftly, and more firmly, sanctions cannot have much effect and they can be resisted. And I don't agree that sanctions won't have effect, nor can they be resisted. But you see where he's putting the blame is I would feel like if you're Rouhani, if you're the foreign minister and you're all those guys, you may end up in Evan prison pretty soon.
Yeah. I think that's what they're trying to do. You think that's what they're trying to do, Andy?
Yeah, it looks like it is. I mean, when you look at the
analysis
and analyze it the way Jordan has, and it's very well analyzed. He's saying, the sanctions aren't going to hurt us. It's the people who are in power right now beneath me.
So we need to get rid of them.
Who are creating the situation, yeah, and they may be on the way out.
All right, let's go ahead and take some phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. Who's next?
Yeah, let's go to Bronson in Washington State on line 6. Bronson, welcome to JCQ.
I'm going to send you our book, Unholy Alliance, because you've been holding a long time, Bronson. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Hi. Wanting to see what you thought about this idea. I was kind of thinking that maybe this whole thing on these tweets out of Iran is geared to feed the American media and the Democrats, Democratic Socialist Party, I'd say, the idea of, because they want to influence the American voter. They want to scare them, kind of like Russia. They were going to send super missile to Florida, which happened to be a state. And I just wonder if these foreign countries, they want to influence the American opinion. It plays into the narrative.
Yeah, so, Harry, I mean, they're playing to them. He's tweeting out in English. Of course he's trying to play to an American base.
I think that's absolutely correct. I think the message is first directed to the Iranian people and secondly directed to the American administration. But thirdly, there's a political message behind it. If the United States changes, in other words, changes who is president, then Iran is prepared to come back to the table, renegotiate the JCPOA, and continue its malevolence
Iranian perhaps, election interference.
There you go. Yeah, I think it may require down the road.
Special counsel. Yeah, there you go.
We'll leave that for collusion.
Yep. And the Ayatollah is smart because the anti-Trump hysteria and most of the media in the United States, they are looking for a reason to buy into Iran's narrative. Even though Iran, imparted this thing in that tweet, he said, there will be no war. That way, if something breaks out, well, it's the administration's fault in America, not their fault. In fact, that is so disingenuous. They are already at war. They routinely, through their proxies, attack Saudi Arabia. They attack Israel. They're a malevolent influence in the world. So, in effect, Iran is already at war. They just won't admit it.
There's a lot of news right now going on, by the way, on Pastor Andrew Brunson because a Turkish court rejected an appeal for the pastor to be allowed to go back to the United States. I will tell you, we are not, Andy, surprised at that at all. The Turkish judicial system is not independent or real.
No, it's owned by Erdogan, Tayyip Recep. Erdogan, the president of the country, owns the country. He owns the judiciary. He's the strong man. He's the power man. He tells them what to do and what not to do. And the fact that they keep him in house detention, in a way, is a blessing because they could put him back in confinement at any moment. But fortunately, they're not doing that.
All right, let's take another call.
Yeah, let's go to Tamara in Nevada online, too. Tamara's also been holding on. Tamara, welcome to JSEC Live.
Hi, Tamara. Go ahead. We're going to send you a copy of our book on Iran as well.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Yep.
I just wanted to ask if you think that the sanctions on Iran and Turkey would cause them to do something desperate like attack Israel for their natural gas reserve that they've discovered.
Don't think they'll attack Israel. That would be a non-starter for them. Not only would Israel's allies in the region come to their aid, but so would the United States, and Israel could take care of itself besides that. Having said that, they also, though, you ask about the call screener put in there that you're concerned about Iran, Turkey, and Russia banding together. There is, I mean, Jordan, there is some concern on that. I mean,
yeah, there is.
Turkey's made the overture.
The problem is that those countries, unlike the wars we've seen in the past, have not shown to really stand by their friends when it's not worthwhile anymore. True. So, for instance, you know, it's worthwhile for Russia to stand by Assad because of the warm water port. If Assad looks like he's falling, then it's no longer worthwhile to stand by Assad. So it's not because they really like Assad in there, or that their ideology is tied together. I think same thing goes with Iran. By the way, I don't believe that the Russians want a nuclear Iran. I think they'd be with us on that. I think that if you want to come up with an interesting alliance, I think you could have Iran, Saudi Arabia, Israel, I mean, Russia, all coming together to take out a Iran that went nuclear.
Yep. All right, so we're getting a lot of people have asked us on Facebook and Periscope. I'm sure our radio audience is listening to us. So whatever happened to your picture of the Straits of Hormuz? So we are now putting up on the screen. There is the Straits of Hormuz, and it's it borders the UAE, United Arab Emirates, and Iran. And the primary shipping lane for oil is this, right?
Right. It's the largest shipping lane for oil in the world.
So if they close that, the impact that would have on the economies of the world would be significant, which means, Harry, they're not going to close it, or they're not going to be allowed to close it.
They will not be able to sustain it, either because of military intervention or because of pressure from other economies.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call.
Yep. Chris in Nevada on line one. Chris, welcome to JSecure Live.
Hey, Chris.
Hi. Isn't the ultimate goal of the administration sanctions to have the economy get so bad in Iran that the Iranian people overthrow the Iranian regime, as opposed to negotiating a new deal, especially when Iran's leaders never abide by the terms anyway?
Jordan. I think that, listen, one thing would be is to have the people really overthrow the regime, I don't think happens without some kind of counterintelligence support, covert operations support
and mass
from the U.S.
on the streets.
Mass numbers, ultimately likely armed. Yeah. And so I'm not saying the U.S. going to war, but we have covert operations, and you better make sure you're arming the right people, because I don't want to. I think that the worst would be is you have that moment and you got an Ayatollah. He's a reformist Ayatollah. That's not what the world needs. Is we need to keep that group out of any kind of revolution. But I don't see it happening without covert support, at least to an Iranian resistance.
What do you think?
In the United States, we do not always state publicly our goals, and so I think we'd like to have regime change in Iran. You betcha. You know, we may not be stating that, but if that happens because of economic sanctions or political unrest, we would not mourn the loss of the Ayatollah and his regime.
What do you think, Andy?
I agree with Wes entirely. That's exactly a correct analysis. We want to see the regime change. I think we want to see it there. We definitely want to see it in Turkey, and we're going about it the right way under this president.
What do you see, Harry, as it relates to the economy? We only got 30 seconds here. Can the Iranian people sustain these kind of hardships?
Not for very long, but they can certainly sustain things longer than I believe Turkey can. They're less vulnerable than the Turks.
All right, very informative broadcast, and I'm glad we're able to bring it to you. We'll have a lot more news and a lot of other developments on tomorrow's broadcast. Again, ACLJ.org to support the work of the ACLJ. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org.